Bacon? Gotta get that bacon! Smoky bacon, crispy bacon, tasty bacon! Where is it? Where's the bacon? Yummy, crunchy bacon, bacon, bacon! Zoom, yum, 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 it's bacon! I love you. I love bacon, I love you. I love bacon, I love you. I love bacon, I love you.
Do you love bacon? Are you begging for bacon like this dog in the Beggin' Strips commercial? What is the appeal of bacon to you? Are you a fan of this bacon craze that we're in? Or do you think bacon fans are crazy? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. How did this breakfast meat turn into a craze that finds bacon in every imaginable consumer product, from cupcakes to ice cream to dental floss to alarm clocks? Our guest this hour says it was no accident. We will hear the story behind the bacon boom, and we'll welcome your questions and your favorite ways to enjoy your bacon. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David Sachs. He's a writer specializing in business and food. He's a regular contributor to the New York Times, Bloomberg Businessweek, and many other publications. He is author of The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes but Fed Up with Fondue. And he also wrote a recent piece that appeared in Business Week, The Bacon Boom Was Not an Accident. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, you know, I saw your piece, and I also saw that the first ever bacon festival in Wisconsin, in Madison, is coming up on November 1st. So this weekend.
Talk about timing.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big festival celebrating all things bacon. And just let's start with, how big is bacon these days?
Bacon is huge. I mean, it's a multi billion-dollar economy in an industry in the United States alone, which, you know, it's always been a staple of food in the country. But the difference is that it's now no longer just reserved for breakfast and sort of club sandwiches. Bacon finds itself in almost every part of the food chain, from drinks like bacon-flavored vodka and bacon-flavored Bloody Marys to candies and cookies and sort of dessert, let alone, you know, finding itself in entrees and appetizers and restaurants, from sort of fine dining restaurants and places in Chicago and New York and probably in Madison, to, you know, chains such as Denny's, which now have a seasonal bacon menu called Baconalia, where, you know, they have everything from extra piled on bacon sandwiches to bacon flavored ice cream sundaes. So bacon has spread out and is no longer just sort of the accompaniment to eggs and pancakes.
Yeah, I mean, and you write that bacon has become the defining food trend of a society obsessed with food trends. How is this?
Well, I think because you know, it's so relatable. So if you think about the other sort of big defining food trend of this food trend era, it would probably be cupcakes. But cupcakes are fairly limited in their application, right? At the end of the day, it's dessert. You can't really have a breakfast cupcake. You can't have a main course cupcake. But you can have a bacon cupcake, and you can precede that bacon cupcake with, you know, a thick-cut slab of sort of braised pork belly as your main course, and Brussels sprouts with bacon as your side, and you know, a wedge salad with a crumbled sort of bacon dressing before that, with a bacon Bloody Mary on the side. Bacon can go everywhere. It is you know, an omnivorous food, and so by adding bacon to any dish, a restaurant or a food company is able to sort of tap into the zeitgeist that really surrounds food trends. You know, you add bacon to something and suddenly it's cool, and it usually tastes better. Usually, I say. I've had some pretty awful bacon creations as well.
Well, in the spirit of full disclosure, I don't eat bacon. I haven't had bacon for, I don't know, a couple decades at least, except by accident. Someone put it in ice cream and I didn't know it. So why did someone put bacon in my ice cream?
That's a good question. I think, you know, part of it comes down to sort of taste, right? Bacon is essentially, you know, two-thirds fat with a little bit of protein, salt, and smoke. So it delivers a strong, powerful hit of flavor, which really, you know, makes many foods, if not better, then certainly more prominent. And so by adding bacon to things, for example, bacon and Brussels sprouts, I mean, that really brought Brussels sprouts from a food that was almost the butt of jokes to something that was hot and featured in many restaurants everywhere. And really, the Brussels sprouts were a vehicle for the bacon. The fat of the bacon and the saltiness and sort of the smokiness added that textural and flavor element to the Brussels sprouts and other vegetables people have done it with, kale, for example, that was missing before if you just, you know, cook Brussels sprouts on their own. But it also became something of, again, you know, this idea of being with the zeitgeist. So to do a caramel ice cream or a salted caramel ice cream it's good, and it's something that sort of makes sense in terms of dessert and okay, yeah, you know, caramel and ice cream. But to do a bacon caramel, salted caramel ice cream is daring and a bit shocking, and it grabs headlines. And in today's food-obsessed culture and food trend-obsessed culture, where all the media loves to devote tremendous coverage to what's happening with food, what's happening in restaurants, what's happening with chefs, you know, doing something like that will garner attention on Twitter, on blogs, in the traditional media. And so, you know, putting bacon in somewhere that would be unexpected, like ice cream, you know, it tastes different, but sometimes it's more than about the taste. It's almost a marketing tool to get you to come in and, you know, buy vanilla.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how we got to where we are now. You'd mentioned that it was a staple, a breakfast meat, maybe the club sandwich. But in the 1980s, didn't bacon sales take a real hit? Tell us what happened in the 1980s.
Yeah, bacon was always, again, that sort of staple, an accompaniment to breakfast. And then the bacon demand would peak seasonally in the summer and late and sort of early fall with tomato season to go along with club sandwiches, BLTs, and Cobb salads. And then in the 1980s, bacon consumption really dipped, and bacon and pork belly prices sort of corresponded to that because of the big food trend of low-fat diets. You know, now we're worried about gluten and grains and other things, but, you know, back in the 1980s, if you remember, I mean, fat was the devil. We were cooking egg whites and margarine. You know, any sort of fat was what was going to kill you, and that was really detrimental to bacon sales and bacon consumption. And so it got to the point where, you know, pork bellies were trading at 19 cents a pound, probably about, you know, a tenth of where they are today. And you know, pork producers were essentially, you know, selling them to the government to give away to other countries because nobody wanted this stuff. And in pork marketing circles, largely in sort of Des Moines, Iowa, which is the pig capital of America, the pork farmers were going to the, you know, pork board, and they were saying, look, you have to do something. This, you know, the pork, the belly of the pig is the biggest cut on the animal. It makes up sort of the bulk of the weight of all the cuts. And so if the price of that is down, it drags the rest of the price of the hog down, whether it's the chops or the loins or the ham or whatever. and so, you know, the pork board at that point was trying to reposition pork to be the other white meat, if you remember that campaign, right? This is, you know, this is just chicken. It's a pink chicken. It doesn't have feathers, but, you know, it's low fat and very lean. That they were trying to sort of capture the boneless, skinless chicken breast wave, which everybody was riding, and because that's where things were going. But the pork producers were saying, look, you know, you could sell the loins you want, but if we can't increase demand for these bellies, we're going to lose money. And so a couple of people in the pork marketing world decided to sort of work with food service and in the fast food world and began sort of looking at, okay, well, you know, if we can get people in fast food chains to pick up on bacon just a bit, then we can, you know, increase the price exponentially, right? You know, a 10% rise in the consumption of bacon or pork bellies is gonna actually give us a lift. And at the time, the fast food chains, whether it was McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's, were serving, you know, coming out with all these lean burgers and lean sandwiches. They were trying to capture the lean market, and nobody was buying them because, frankly, they tasted dry and
right.
They lacked flavor, right? When you want a hamburger, you don't want extra lean, low fat. It's just going to be cardboard. So one of the people from the Food Service Marketing, the Pork Board, had a chance encounter with someone from the fast food chain Hardee's, and Hardee's decided, okay, you know what, they're going to be the first to sort of debut a line of sandwiches featuring bacon. It was called the Frisco Burger. It came out in 1992, and even though Hardee's is a relatively small chain, much smaller today than it was then, you know, those Frisco burgers, which were sort of high fat, very decadent, lots of strips of bacon on them, sold really well. And the other chains, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy, sort of through later in the 1990s, started seeing this, and they started adding bacon burgers or bacon as an option on burgers, whether it's a Whopper or a McDonald's cheeseburger or a Wendy's Baconator, to their own menu. And the sales reflected that. So even though everybody was saying they wanted to eat low fat, and that was apparently the big trend, in reality, people wanted flavor and they wanted substance to their food. And when they were going out for a drive-through burger, they didn't want a lean, boneless, skinless chicken breast. They wanted a burger and they wanted bacon on it.
Yeah, so that really picked up sales then.
Yeah, and that really sort of started this trend, which is very different from other food trends. You know, we think of food trends today as a hot chef, whether it's, you know, David Chang in New York or Grant Achatz in Chicago, will do something innovative and interesting, and that'll get sort of coverage and it'll be on the Food Network, and then other independent restaurants will take it and put their own spin on it until eventually, you know, Chili's or the Cheesecake Factory sort of finds a way to make it a mass-produced item. But this was quite the opposite. This was something that came from the industry, came from, you know, the pork industry to the fast food chain restaurant world. And then because there were all these bacon burgers out there, it started, you know, a trend of young chefs, independent chefs, you know, rethinking bacon, putting bacon in their dishes, cooking bacon with something like Brussels sprouts, or into desserts. And sort of through the 2000s, bacon became this cultural thing where it was almost, you know, the taste of it was aside from it. It was just cool to put bacon in something. You know, you were being pretty rebellious if you were doing that. And you know, a whole culture around bacon eating popped up to the point where you get all these different festivals and bumper stickers and tattoos.
We are talking with David Sachs. He's a writer specializing in business and food. We've talked to him before about his book, The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes But Fed Up with Fondue. He wrote a recent piece that appeared in Business Week. The bacon boom was not an accident. So we're talking about how we came to where we are today with this bacon craze, where bacon is a big part of just about everything we eat and even things we don't eat. What do you think about this bacon craze? Are you enjoying it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So who's going to the first ever bacon festival in Madison on Saturday, November 1st? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. Take some bacon and I'll put it in a pancake. Bacon pancakes, that's what it's gonna make. Bacon pancake.
So, have you put bacon in your pancakes? What are some of your favorite ways to enjoy your bacon? And what do you make of the bacon craze that's going on, the bacon boom? Our guest is David Sachs. He is the author of a piece that appeared in Business Week. The bacon boom was not an accident. We're hearing the story behind the rise of bacon, and welcoming your questions and welcoming your thoughts about bacon. Favorite bacon products or things. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Maybe you're beyond the bacon boom. You can call in too and let us know why. So we just heard the song Bacon Pancakes, which I didn't know existed, but
what is that from? Where
I don't. We'll have to find out. Christy Taylor found it for me. I guess it's a TV show called Adventure Time is where that came from.
Oh yes. Okay.
Anyway, we have though Marsha on Facebook who writes, "I adore bacon. Believe it or not, I didn't even eat it until I was in my 40s. Now I love it. Bacon burgers, bacon mac and cheese, grilled cheese sandwiches with bacon on my salads, chocolate chip cookies with bacon." And then she goes on to say, waffles and pancakes. So you don't just need it, you know, it's not just a side dish for breakfast anymore, David Sachs.
No, it's become, as they say, sort of center of the plate. It's become the draw for many dishes. And that's the interesting thing, and that's really affected sort of the price of bacon and the way bacon is now perceived. You know, the Pork Marketing Board has abandoned its other white meat campaign a number of years ago, and now, you know, says things like it's better with bacon, or you know, be inspired with pork. So it's really changed the way that you know that. Pork is sort of sold and marketed, and is now seen as something that can drive, can drive behavior and drive sort of ordering in restaurants.
So when you say it is the bacon boom was not an accident, it's because the pork producers are saying we've got to do something to save our livelihoods here, and started marketing it as a good thing to eat.
Right. Now, you know, would it have happened naturally on its own, sort of organically, as the pendulum swung back inevitably from sort of the low-fat diet trend? Possibly in some way, but I think the sort of scale of it and the speed of its growth really speaks to the efforts that the Pork Marketing Board put into it, and sort of seeding this as a huge food trend.
Well, you know, we talked about how in the 80s we were told to eat low fat, and that's when bacon sales and pork sales started declining. But I also remember how if we ate cold cuts and bacon, that we were going to kill ourselves with nitrates.
Right. You're gonna, you know, every era, every decade, every year has its sort of reigning health trend, and we tend to underestimate them. I think it's easy to dismiss them, but these health trends really have a huge impact on the food business, from what's on restaurant menus to what's being sold in supermarkets to the way products are made and everything down to sort of commodity prices and how a farmer's livelihood is being affected. And you saw this with bacon. You see it now with, say, the gluten-free trend, where bakeries are having to refine their product lines. Different, you know, restaurant chains and sort of food companies are having to adjust what's being produced by them because these diets are sort of coming up and changing demand.
Are we no longer concerned about the nitrates?
I'm not sure about the nitrates. Yeah. I mean, I think you still see nitrate-free things. Obviously the amount of salt in bacon is still a concern. The culinary momentum of the trend is almost pushed that through.
Right. We're not concerned enough to not eat it.
Yeah. I think the fat craze was a big one. Mm-hmm. But that was also, the low fat health trend was one of the first massive society wide health trends. Mm-hmm. and it was, you know, backed by impeccable research and you know, the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Association. And now, of course, the research has sort of come out long-term and saying, well, actually, you know, saturated fat isn't, you know, as long as it's natural, not trans fat, it's not bad for you. It's not as bad as we thought.
Well, let's get to some calls. Dave in Elroy is with us. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I think the turkey growers must owe the pork marketing board gratitude because we eat a lot of bacon, but we never eat pork bacon. We always buy turkey bacon, which has, in the last 10 years or so, become quite readily available in grocery stores. And we make our BLTs with turkey bacon. We put turkey bacon in soup, and any place you would put the other bacon, we put turkey bacon. So I guess my question would be, has the spin-off from the pork marketing board, in fact, helped the turkey industry? Is there some statistical evidence of that?
I don't know specifically statistical evidence. I mean, anecdotally, it probably has, and it's probably benefited all sorts of bacon-type products. There's a company called J&D's Foods out of Seattle. And they make all sorts of different bacon-flavored products, none of which have any pork in them. They're actually, you know, kosher vegan products. But the biggest one is Baconaise, bacon-flavored mayonnaise, or bacon salt is what they started with. They make, you know, bacon candy, bacon popcorn, even novelty items like bacon-flavored lip gloss. And this is, you know, a multi-million-dollar company that is growing with sort of the rise of the demand for bacon culture more than anything. So it's less about, oh, I want that piece of sort of perfect crispy bacon. It's more the idea of, oh, everybody's eating bacon. This is what's happening. And so, I've heard of something called Fakin, which is, a tofu type bacon product. Bacon salt, again, that J&D's makes is being used to sort of make all these other bacon products that don't necessarily have bacon in them. And that goes for, turkey bacon and beef bacon and all these other sort of ancillary bacons. I think the turkey people are happy, at least from a club sandwich front, they're probably happy as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Michael in Appleton is with us. Hi, Michael.
Hi. First, I just wanted to mention I really enjoy that you guys used a little clip from the show Adventure Time with Bacon Pancake. John DiMaggio does that voice, and I love that show. My main sort of thing is, well, for one, it's kind of fun for me. This whole show reminds me back probably about 15 years ago, some family friends, actually with two of them together, were the ones to come up with the microwave-ready bacon. And I remember the whole group being very excited about that. I think they ended up selling it to either Oscar Mayer or Hormel. I can't remember. But so that the whole show just kind of reminded me of that. But then I really, the thing I like most about the sort of baking craze that's going on, even though sometimes I think they can get a little carried away, is that for me, it's increased the availability or the ease of procuring thick cut bacon or sort of traditional cut bacon and the peppered cuts and all that kind of stuff. And that's, if I'm making bacon to eat bacon just as bacon, that's what I really enjoy, just the big thick piece of smoky fat. So.
The bacon trend has what it's done is it's grown the market from, you know, supermarket bacon, sort of commodity bacon, to the point where all these boutique producers, small farms, purveyors of high quality, thick cut, applewood smoked, natural, organic, nitrate free bacon, however you want it, you know, however you want to slice bacon and have it, there's now an option for that. And I think you see that quite a lot. You know, Newski's, which is a Wisconsin-based company, is one of the leaders in this field, and they've done tremendously well and benefited tremendously from being sort of a niche producer of bacon that had a pretty small market share to a substantial company that's met the demand for that high-quality bacon.
Are you familiar with the microwavable bacon? I remember a device that you could put in the microwave with your bacon that would
help you. The little bacon, plastic bacon cooker. I think the plastic of the bacon cooker was probably less healthy for you than the actual bacon. You know, it's interesting that the pre-cooked bacon is somewhat in the home in terms of microwavable bacon, but more in the restaurant business is one of the big reasons why the trend took off. So if we go back to sort of the 90s when these fast food chains were adopting bacon, a lot of them stayed away from bacon and putting bacon on their burgers and sandwiches because bacon, as anyone who's cooked it knows, is a big hot mess. It creates a ton of grease that you have to put into grease traps and pay someone to dispose of. It was very difficult to cook extremely well in terms of that perfect point between sort of undercooked and chewy or overcooked and crisp. And it's dangerous. It is a grease fire trap. You can get grease burns and sort of spatter. So if you're running a restaurant, you know, there's a lot of liability there. There's a lot of equipment that you have to put in terms of better ventilation for smoking. I mean, as anybody who knows who's cooked bacon in their house, you know, it sticks to everything. Everything's going to reek of bacon. And so the big innovation in the 90s that really allowed the restaurant business to take bacon to the masses and sort of make this trend large was the advent of pre-cooked bacon that was done by companies like Hormel and ConAgra. And it was essentially, you know, delivered bacon to restaurants that was grease-free and could be sort of reheated in a convection oven to a perfect consistency and temperature, but without any of the fuss and muss of cooking raw bacon from scratch.
Let's go to Lynn next in Rushford, Minnesota. Hello, Lynn.
Hello. Well, I say God help the pigs. And that's because the confinement operations in which they are produced to meet this demand are simply inhumane. And it's a part of the equation I think we often overlook when we think about eating bacon.
Thoughts on that, David?
It's true. And of course, you see at the high end of things, whether it's, you know, a more expensive restaurant or a boutique sort of small producing bacon brand, they will treat their animals better and use that as a selling point for what they're doing. And sometimes that goes up to chains like Chipotle, who, you know, talks about not using cages and sort of having a free range policy. But, you know, people demand in America, they demand value for money. They demand things be cheap, and bacon, which was once cheap, is becoming increasingly expensive. And so in order to keep it cheap, you know, a lot of companies will resort to the types of, you know, mass-produced factory farming practices that are deplorable.
Lynn, thanks for bringing that up. We had a lot of Facebook comments along those lines as well. Joe on Facebook says, the commercial hog industry is ridiculous. However, I cannot claim to be a vegetarian, so I'd push for small farms, locally grown, humane, organic pork. Big hog farms are incredibly destructive to air, water, soil, etc. And then he says that they produce 1.5 times more manure per hog than humans do. Ask anyone who lives near a feedlot. So we can love our bacon and get it locally and humanely raised, David Sachs?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the number of, you know, as the thing about a food trend is it has tremendous economic consequences, good or bad, depending on who you are and where your position is. If you own a hog farm, it's good. If you live next to that hog farm that's expanding and, you know, your house is covered in aerosolized manure, then, yeah, it's terrible. You know, as that market has grown, what it does is it creates opportunities for niche producers, people like Newski's, or sort of Benton's Bacon in Virginia, or other local producers in Wisconsin that I may not know of, to sort of differentiate themselves by offering a higher quality product or a product that is, made in a more sustainable, environmentally friendly way, or a way that's more humane for animals in the communities it's in. And as that occurs, as those pull away sales from sort of commodity producers, the commodity producers take a look and see what's happening and sort of revise their policies. So I think I read just this week in a newspaper about McDonald's, you know, sales are dipping, Chipotle sales are rising, and McDonald's is now sort of going and revising how it's going to be obtaining meat and dealing with animal producers. And, you know, they're touting how everything they make is natural and real. You know, 20 years ago, I don't think anyone would have cared about this, and McDonald's certainly didn't. But as those smaller upstarts who are using better products are growing, and that in itself is a trend, you know, organic is a trend, local is a trend, you see these large commodity producers and sellers noticing it and saying, well, listen, there's money to be made here. And if there's money to be made, then this is maybe something that we can invest in and people will pay more for. And that's why, you know, at Walmart now, you can buy organic milk. You can buy organic produce at Walmart, which I think 5-10 years ago would have been unthinkable. And so these things can become mainstream, and the trend that, you know, grows those factory farms can also grow sort of a greater change in more sustainable types of food processing.
You'd mentioned Newski's Bacon, which is a Wittenberg, Wisconsin, if I'm not sure. Another Facebook listener says, Jerry on Facebook says, his favorite bacon is from Brandon Meats and Sausage, and says that just listed numerous awards, bacon awards, that Brandon has received, and that appears to be located in Brandon, Wisconsin. So there's another local bacon person. Dana in Manitowoc County is with us. Hi, Dana.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention that I raise my own bacon. Essentially, we raise a handful of happy pigs that get their belly rubbed. They all have names, and they're just wonderful pigs. And I can't tell you how much better their meat and their bacon is for you. Happy pigs actually have higher HDL, I believe, the good cholesterol, and lower bad cholesterol. So it's actually heart healthy to eat bacon from happy pigs. And that means, you know, pigs out of confinement and on small farms. And we also take our pigs to a butcher, Otto's Meat in Luxembourg, and they do all of their work without nitrates. So it's kind of a win-win, and we love our pigs dearly, and we also love to eat them alongside with our eggs.
So, what, Dana? What besides next to eggs? How do you have your bacon?
You know, I think anyway, the bacon is just so darn delicious that you can't have it a bad way.
Yeah. Well, and you just have your make bacon for your family. You don't sell this to the public, right?
We do. We do sell basically by the half or the whole hog. So,
oh, I see.
You know, you don't just get to pick all bacon. And actually, we actually get shoulder, what usually would be like a shoulder roast, into something called shoulder bacon because we love our bacon that much. And it's just a little bit leaner bacon tasting meat. So it's perfect for BLTs and anything else.
Thank you very much, Dana, for the call. We'll continue talking about the bacon boom. What's behind it? And we'll talk some about where it's going. Is it here to stay? Do you hope it's here to stay? Do you have any favorite ways or unusual ways to enjoy your bacon? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is David Sachs. He's a writer specializing in business and food. He is the author of The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes but Fed Up with Fondue, and he wrote a recent piece in Business Week on the bacon boom. He says the bacon boom was not an accident. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
When imagination blossoms, only this scent will guide you to your greatest awakening. Wake up. Wake up.
the morning of your dreams. Only from Oscar Mayer.
That is a commercial for the Oscar Mayer Bacon Alarm Clock. Is that a joke? Christy's saying it's, she doesn't think it's a joke.
Yeah, the amount of bacon sort of related products out there shows that this has gone beyond sort of a food trend to something that's a bigger cultural phenomenon. You know, that company J&D's Foods out of Seattle makes a number of novelty products. One of them is a bacon coffin, which costs $3,000, and they sold three of. And even more importantly, they sell a bacon-flavored sort of personal lubricant, and they've sold tens of thousands of these. So, you know, it is as much about identifying with a peer group and a part of the culture as it is about just enjoying the taste of bacon.
Oh, my gosh. Did you say bacon coffin?
Yeah. I mean, it's not actually made of bacon. It has sort of a bacon motif on it, I guess, or bacon art. But yeah, they sell a bacon tuxedo. There's, you know, bacon t-shirts, little baby bacon onesies.
Yeah,
you name it.
This I guess that this Oscar Mayer bacon alarm clock is actually there's an app that you can have on your phone. And yes or no, Christy, do you actually somehow smell the bacon, or you just hear the, you smell the bacon? So they're really getting elaborate here.
Really? Smell-o-vision.
And I see that there are Halloween costumes too, so you can dress up as a slab of bacon or something for Halloween. Now, why does a food expand beyond the role of being a food?
I think because today, you know, food culture is very democratic. Everybody can relate to it. So, you know, 20 years ago or more, it was really sort of gourmets and epicures who were the true foodies. And they tended to be wealthy. They tended to travel a lot. And the rest of us didn't really relate to that in any sort of way. But if you think about who considers themselves a foodie today, it could be someone who's, you know, a millionaire and traveled around the world and, you know, has eaten truffles in Italy. But it could also be someone who watches Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives every night and goes and eats sort of crazy sandwiches and is really into deep frying a turkey and stuffing it with, you know, as many sausages as they can on Thanksgiving. And so food has become entertainment, and food culture is really, you know, a core part of what our culture is. I mean, we don't really listen to opera. People are less likely to go to sort of concerts and live events today in the age of the internet, but you can't stream dinner yet. And so food culture is a big way people of sort of all classes in America relate to each other. And that takes something like bacon and makes it really relevant as a topic of sort of conversation and entertainment. And again, it can work in any number of ways. If you are in the sort of organic, sustainable movement or a real sort of high-end foodie, you can, you know, talk about the boutique producers of, you know, slow-cured bacon that that raise their hogs naturally, as the caller before had. Or if you're sort of into that sort of frat boy style of food adventurism, you can talk about online shows like Epic Mealtime, where, you know, the hosts will try to eat the most outrageous caloric bombs, which are usually filled with hundreds of slices of bacon. And so it's a gathering point for ideas and identity.
Interesting. Peter on Facebook took a little bit of guff for one of his comments. He wrote, "I think bacon is popular because people are desperate to be part of an in-group. I know the bacon meme too. Love me, love me." Does he got a point, a little bit anyway?
Well, I think you can see that with any trend, whether it's a food trend or whether it's sort of a music trend. There's always going to be pushback, but it's a group identity. And I went to Bacon Fest in Chicago 2 years ago, which is one of the bigger sort of bacon festivals. And, you know, you had people of all stripes, of all ages, of all all backgrounds, social, economic, racial, coming together, wearing crazy bacon t-shirts, dressing up like pigs, eating all this sort of food. I mean, it is a community. It's a way that people identify. Some people identify by the type of music they listen to, and some people identify by the books they read, and some people identify by the food they eat.
Yeah. And Lisa Marie on Facebook, though, counters, how about the fact that bacon is smoky, salty, sweet, and fatty, and a little proteiny, all part of evolutionary psychology of food cravings. So Lisa Marie says bacon has a lot going for it.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is a bacon trend and not, say, a prosciutto trend or a pork chop trend, is that it was, you know, it fundamentally is a relatively available food that's relatively inexpensive and hits upon things that many people like to eat, whether that's, you know, flavor or texture.
Tyler in Whitewater is with us. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
Good. We can hardly hear you, Tyler. Can you speak right into the telephone receiver?
Yeah, not a problem. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead with your comment or question.
I actually have a restaurant in Whitewater, Wisconsin, and we love to buy the whole hog. But the thing I'm trying to remind people is make sure that you're eating all the other cuts because they're just important to getting through a whole pig. You can't do local unless we can buy and serve all the pig locally. So right now we're doing a lot of, like, bacon jam and stuff to kind of spread the amount of bacon a little further so we can have time to go through the rest of the parts.
Oh, well Tyler, what's not selling as well?
Ham, actually. I think ham's kind of the past favorite, which is interesting to me. It was always the ham sandwich that went, but the ham, we get substantially more ham per hog than we do bacon, than we do loins, that kind of thing.
Well, maybe you need to make some ham jam.
Ham jam. I'm going to have to give that a try.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from talking to people in the pork industry, the bacon boom has been a very good driver for people eating more pork in general. You know, if you're into bacon, you're more likely to sort of discover all these other cuts of pork, and it, you know, it makes people appreciate that, and especially things like you know, sausages and pork neck and shoulder and these other cuts. But obviously, you know, bacon is still the reigning thing, and so ham might not have its moment now, but it is that difficulty because as the gentleman said, you know, there's still only one belly per hog, and you still have the whole rest of that animal. Whether you're selling it or growing it or buying it, I mean, people still have to eat the rest of that. It has to be used.
Thank you, Tyler. Sue in Madison is with us now. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Joy, and hi, guests. I just a couple things. I'll make it quick because I know you're short. I was vegetarian for like 10 years earlier in my life, and I have to say one of the things that sort of brought me back was bacon, and I think some of it is just great memories growing up, sort of eating bacon with my whole family and my dad, particularly on the weekends. Unfortunately, my favorite way to have eggs is basted in bacon grease, which is probably not so great for you. But one thing just to share, my husband and I recently discovered a wonderful way to fix bacon, and that is in the oven on 400 degrees on a cookie sheet with aluminum foil, 15 minutes, it comes out perfect. You don't have to stand there flipping it over and having bacon splattering all over you and all over your kitchen. You still get the great smell of bacon in your kitchen, and it's just been like eye-opening. We just love it. Put it in the oven and come back later, and it's done in 15 minutes. So that's been one of those wonderful discoveries recently. So that's my comment.
Thank you for sharing it, Sue. That's good to know. And I find it interesting that bacon is what brought her back to meat eating from being a vegetarian.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard any vegetarians who have then gone back to meat eating because of, you know, a chicken breast. It's always bacon or corned beef or something that's delivers that full intense experience.
Yeah, I have been a vegetarian for many years, and the thing I missed the most of all things was the taste of bratwurst because it was fatty and greasy and spicy.
Right. It's very hard to replicate that.
and you know, even though I hadn't had bacon in so long, I mentioned that I had it accidentally in ice cream, and it was a caramel bacon ice cream. I immediately recognized that taste. You know, and I just put a little tiny spoonful to my lips, and all of a sudden I was like, that's bacon. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's unmistakable, which I think is one of the reasons why it's so popular.
Yeah. You know, I think we have time for another caller, to Leisha in Spring Green. Hi, Leisha.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question or comment?
Well, I just wanted to say that one of my absolute favorite things to do is read cookbooks. And, well, I cook too, but I have this, you know, kind of a sinful cookbook collection. But anyway, one of my favorite cookbooks is called The Encyclopedia of American Cookery. And it was published in 1972, and I was just reading it last night, and I was trying to find a recipe for corn and cottage cheese, but what I came across was corn on the cob. You take corn on the cob, and you smear it with peanut butter, and then you wrap it in bacon and grill it.
Why not?
That was 1972. God. I'm like, whoa.
That is hilarious. Thank you, Leisha, for sharing that. Boy, here, Kathy on Facebook says, I have had a naughty pig sundae. It's melted peanut butter, sliced bananas, and bacon over vanilla ice cream. It was very good. Well, I'm wondering, David, is the bacon boom, the bacon craze, the fad, the trend here to stay? I mean, is it ever going to go away?
I think so. I mean, I think parts of it may diminish the, you know, novelty products, the desserts and so forth. But I think bacon occupies a pretty central place in the American diet. And barring, again, some huge health trend that once again knocks bacon down, it could happen. It could be sort of sodium levels or smoke or something. It will always remain part of the diet. I think people will very reluctantly give up that bacon on their club sandwich or bacon on their cheeseburger or certainly the side of eggs.
Yeah, so the bacon, at least, trend is likely to be here to stay. Is there a next bacon on the horizon, though? I mean, your book was about how, you know, one day it's cupcakes and one day it's fondue and then it's something else. What's the next big food craze?
It's hard to see, you know, what could supplant bacon. I think a lot of people are talking about other sorts of things. Oh, sausage could be the next bacon. Someone else said duck could be the next bacon. But the reason why something like bacon, you know, can hold on as a primary food trend for a decade or more is because it's so familiar and it's so readily available. And it's hard to think of what other item is like that. So maybe it will be ham. Who knows?
Just very briefly, do you have a favorite way to have your bacon?
You know, it's funny. I've never been a huge bacon fanatic. My brother is and always was. As a kid, he would just make bacon, a plate of bacon for a snack. but I really do love a club sandwich.
Yeah.
And turkey, fresh sliced turkey, club sandwich with bacon. That or a BLT are my favorite ways to eat it.
Yeah, I love that. I love my smarter fake bacon and tomato and lettuce sandwiches too. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
David Sachs is the author of Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes But Fed Up with Fondue, and a recent piece in Business Week, The Bacon Boom Was Not an Accident. By the way, the Bacon Fest in Madison is Saturday, November 1st at the Alliant Center. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.